example in revisiting these ancient histories has been to glory at just how very far we have come from these messy, blunt, rudimentary attempts to finally capture in prose the story of an island race who had for so long so foolishly fended off any possibility of keeping any kind of written record, in favour of ever-changing word of mouth, shared around the tribal hearth after a few horns of mead. I come not to praise Caesar, nor for that matter Tacitus, Gildas, Bede, or Nennius, but first of all to wonder across the centuries at their amusingly myopic worldviews. It would perhaps be juvenile to actively mock these score-settling efforts from long-dead, humble or not-so-humble scribes for their seemingly gullible approach to examining British history. And yet, there remains something so entertaining, to me at least, about the imaginative act of putting yourself in their sandals, trying to fully understand what it might have been like for these ancient historians to attempt to take stock of this ever-evolving nation's story, given such limited resources. Lest we lambast the Saxon or the Norman too harshly for their simplistic view of British history, we have to admit that the pre-Roman inhabitants of the island hardly made it easy to construct any kind of cogent history beyond the turn of the first millennium, between their lack of written communication and especially the highly unfortunate habit of dying in battle in large numbers with each successive invasion. And so these few remaining scraps of early history have been brought together afresh in this way, above all for the sheer fascination of bringing back to life, in a small ghost of a sense, the factual storytellers of hundreds or even thousands of years ago. We live, after all, in a dark time ourselves, where decades of billionaire oligarch-owned media and politics has so chipped away at the public perception of the very concept of truth that we are in danger of enshrining lies in our culture in such a way as to make any of these early medieval historical troglodytes rightly look down their noses at us from the grave. Sadly, we have not socially evolved to become immune to exactly the kind of mindless propaganda reflected in these early histories. When I was writing my second book, The True History of the Black Adder, trying to establish an educated approach to the historical sitcom's many, many lies, I was honoured to spend some time philosophising about British history with the great and dearly missed medieval academic Terry Jones, and he enthused to me about his discoveries concerning the court of Richard II when writing his classic history book, Who Murdered Chaucer? There's a couple of Northern Chronicles where at some point somebody takes over and says, there's a lot of stuff written here that shouldn't have been written. Henry's a jolly good man. I'm sure it's ex-Archbishop Thomas Arundel who creates this propaganda to make out that Richard was a tyrant and Henry was welcomed by the majority of English people. And he rewrites history. He puts out this spin. He wants the chroniclers to fall over backwards to write propaganda for Henry. Propaganda's nothing new. It's always been there, and historians just use whatever they've got at the time. Every story needs a beginning, and this collection of writings makes clear to us that the story of British history begins with the glorification of violence on one hand, and with vicious Christian bluster on the other. Nevertheless, the modern historian's impatient readiness to utterly write off any unverified historical narrative from over a millennium ago as tantamount to mythology, i.e. fiction, rather than what we could call frayed fact viewed through mists of time and human comprehension, has always seemed to me to be as illogical as it is wasteful, when every scruple of existing reportage from those ages we are no longer allowed to describe as dark may still contain some important echoes of truth. My book Tales of Britain aimed, and indeed still aims, to provide the most exhaustive anthology of British folktales released in generations, all retold for the 21st century. And though it has always been central to the collection that each story provides a tourist guide to the location, giving readers a whole new way of exploring the island, I took the decision to arrange the tales in the closest thing possible to a historical order, beginning with the most ancient myths of Britain's origins and coming up to date